Do you want more energy, better sleep, and better health? Who wouldn't? Get a free Scalar Light no obligation 15-day trial at scalarlight.com.
Would you know how to get rid of your fear, phobia, stress, or anxiety? How to burst your fear and transform your life? Welcome to Fear Busters Show, presented by Lauren Rosenberg, fear and phobia relief expert and author of How to Move Forward When the Unthinkable Happens. You are listening to UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio with Lauren Rosenberg. www.fear-busters.com.
Hi, this is Fear Buster and Lauren Rosenberg. Today we're going to talk to Natalie Rivas-Beeling, who is a social entrepreneur, and she's very much joining us today to talk about her fear. And I'm going to leave it to her to explain and to talk about how her fear is affecting her and what is a day-to-day life like. So, hi Natalie.
Hello Lauren.
Hi, thank you very much for joining us today. So would you like to introduce yourself to our listener, just explaining what you do? And
Yeah, sure thing. I am a social entrepreneur, so I have a social enterprise called Split Perspectives, which looks at storytelling as a means of catharsis for healing and growth. And also I'm an author of children's books. I've got three at the moment, which deal with well-being and connectedness in families during COVID-19.
Yeah. Oh, excellent. So, and where can we find those books?
So at the moment you could go to my store, which is www.lollipoplodge.net/store. And you can have all the links there to Amazon paperback versions and also hardback versions. Excellent. Of the merch. Thank you.
So we have something in common because I actually just published my book just before the lockdown in March. And it's also on Amazon. And my book is How to Move Forward When the Unthinkable Happen.
Wow.
So very much in context at the moment. So we've got something also in common about from, yeah.
Well done. That's cool.
Tell our listeners about your fear and how did it started, and yes, just tell us your story.
Okay, so even when I talk about it, sometimes I can feel my body start to tingle.
Okay, so you know what, Natalie, so why don't we do, okay, so let's start with this. So we're going to do a little bit of on-air session just now, just so that you'll be more comfortable. So right. You know when you just said you're just by even mentioning it, where yeah. Do you feel this in your body? What's going on in your body? What's
straight away I feel like a sort of, like my stomach plunged like I'm on a roller coaster.
Okay.
Like a dread, like fear, like yeah. Something mm-hmm. terrible just happened. And then from there I feel very... sometimes quite nauseated, but I've learned to live with that feeling of almost constant nausea.
Okay. So, you know that feeling, just as we are going to talk about this fear to our listeners, where do you feel that in your body right now as we're going to talk about it?
In my chest, I feel the palpitation. And then sometimes I feel in my fingertips, they start to tingle as if I'm not breathing in deep enough to...
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to make you more comfortable, as I'm a fear and phobia expert. I'm going to make you a little bit more comfortable so that you are able to talk to our listeners about your fears. So, because I don't think it's very fair to just go into it and making you feeling some of the feelings like this. So, and I would like you to share really how it's affecting you and you know what make you change your behavior and how you're thinking. So so we're just going to, if you, with your permission, I'm just going to get you to experience a little bit of one of the techniques that I use in order for you to be in a better place, and then you'll be able to feel more comfortable to actually talk about your fear. We haven't told our listeners yet about which fear it is, so a little bit, but we will go into details a bit more when you're more comfortable. So, Natalie, this feeling that you feel in your body right now, because you know we're going to share it, and thank you very much for sharing it with our listeners, your story and how you feel. Where you said in your body, where you feel it, if you had to put a color to it, what color would that be? What does it look like? This dread, feeling, thinking, we're going to talk about it. It's part of your life. Where is that feedback? What color does it look like? If you were to know, what color does it look like, this feeling in your body?
I would say it feels like an icy sort of blue, like a bluey white, because it feels like it kind of paralyzes you and freezes you.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so you probably actually answered to the next question in a sense, because I was going to ask you, what shape does it look like? So you sort of described it already. So what I would like you to do is, if you had to pick a color to get rid of this paralyzing feeling that's in your body, what color would that be?
Yellow.
Okay. So did you know that yellow is the color of control?
Wow. Okay.
Did you know that? And when we decide subconsciously the color that we need to heal or to get rid of this fear is yellow, it means that we want to take control. We want to take control back subconsciously. Wow. So you actually picked the right color that actually needs, that you need in order to get rid of this dread feeling. So what we're going to do, if you can just take a deep breath, close your eyes, and imagine this nice yellow, almost like a yellow river, going down into your throat, going into your chest, and just give yourself permission to allow that yellow to lift and to make this dread feeling, this blue icy feeling, lighter and lighter and lighter and lighter. And just remind yourself that you're safe, that we're not going to take anything away. We're just allowing that color to lift whatever feels trapped, whatever feels a little bit uncomfortable, whatever feels dreading, like you said. Just give yourself permission to allow that color to go in, lifting and making it lighter and lighter and lighter. And as we do that, you may want to yearn or stretch and you may notice also that this dreading feeling in your body become a little smaller or move somewhere else. Just give yourself the permission to see this nice little yellow river flooding in, lifting and making it lighter. And take your time, and once you've done that, just you can take a deep breath and then open your eyes whenever you're ready. And then you can tell me what's that feel like, this dreading feeling, if it's different, if it's the same, if it's a bit smaller.
Yeah. When I breathe, when it's almost like if somebody is there talking to me and I'm taking my breaths, I almost feel comforted by the fact that I'm with somebody who's, I guess, being alone is the worst thing when you start feeling it. You don't feel like anyone's around. So, that did help me to relax, just knowing someone was there talking to me while I was relaxing.
Good.
It almost gave me a license to relax.
Good. Excellent. So this is why, this is the state that I would like you to be in, so that you feel more comfortable to talk about it, so you don't actually have all this feeling coming up, because obviously we don't want you to go into, panic on air and things like that. So, just before we start going into more details about this fear, how are you feeling now compared to when we just started?
Much better.
Much better?
Relaxed. I feel like my body's taking the shape of the chair. I'm not fighting the chair. I'm not stiff in my chair.
Good. Excellent. I can see. And obviously our listeners can't see, but your complexion and your eyes and you're just like sort of like you're lighting up, and it's like, your face is so much brighter. So good. So how does that feel to talk about this fear?
Yes, I'm good.
Good. We can go.
Yes.
Okay, excellent. So, Natalie, just tell us your story. Tell our listeners. Share if, we're very privileged that you're happy to share your fear with us. And just tell me how you started or how you noticed that something was different.
Okay. So I do remember from my childhood certain incidents which I could put my fear of vomiting to. So And as I, and as it's gone along, it's got a lot more complex because it's added some other layers to it. But I think the earliest memory I have is being about maybe 8 years of age and being very poorly, having a stomach upset. And I don't think my mum was there. I think maybe I was at my gran's house and I was very ill. And my gran was downstairs. I was upstairs on my own and laying on the carpet because I felt so sick. I just didn't want to get up. I just wanted to be flat on the carpet with my face on the carpet. And I remember throwing up, but I was so weak that I didn't even retch. It just sort of came out as my face was on the side. Mm-hmm. And I just remember laying there and looking at it for almost like an hour, not able to move. I can even remember what it looked like, what was in it. So I know that in my mind, I can still see that pile of vomit and being so close to it.
So, Natalie, did you know that the subconscious mind lives in the present time? So although you're no longer 18, mm-hmm. this memory is very vivid. Mm-hmm. And there are different ways that you can actually clear this memory if you wanted to. You can use eye movement therapy or EMDR, or you can use, we can go back into the memory because the subconscious mind lives in the present time. So we could actually easily, or I could easily, go back into the memory, change the whole memory. We don't change what happened, but we change the actual memory in the mind mm-hmm. so that we reprogram the software in your mind so that you no longer have this fear in front of you because the subconscious mind lives in the present time. So there's mm-hmm. something that can be done, and that I this is what I do with my clients to get rid of the fear. Exactly like you're explaining, I could almost like, you know, I'm there, I can see it. It's like I remember all the details. And because of that, because it's so vivid, that is why the actual fear is still there, because something happened and it's just... So what did you do then? How did you...
Well, I guess after that, I think that's just the starting point because I don't really remember how I responded to that. I don't think I was old enough to take on all the fears yet. I just mm-hmm. kind of... I was just starting to have those experiences that led to a lifelong fear of it. So the next one was getting a paracetamol tablet stuck in my throat. And it kept...
At the time you took that at the same time, was this a different event?
This was different. This was speeding ahead to about my late teens when I got a tablet stuck in my throat. And it kept repeating on me. Every time I tried to swallow it down, I could just taste the paracetamol. And I remember...
I was just going to stop you there. Yeah. Did you notice that as you talked about it, and our listeners may have heard it, your throat just got... It looked like something just like that. Yeah, you cleared your throat.
Yes.
So consciously, you may not have noticed it, but as I analyze and I look into the person and I notice every little words and details to understand, to understand you more. This now as you talk about it, so you're automatically, subconsciously, you're just, I don't know if you were aware of it, but you just cleared your throat as you were going to mention this story. So, yes, it's very much there. So, sorry, I stopped you, but I thought it was quite just very significant.
Yeah.
You're about to talk about this and how your body is also reacting to it just as you talked about it. So just tell us about the story.
Okay. So, I remember that was the first time being aware of the retching feeling to try and clear it when my body started to try to purge that tablet. And I hated that feeling so much of retching, balking, that whole thing. So that was the first time I remembered about the eyes starting to water and the mouth starting to get wet and the whole thing that I hate so much, the whole range of symptoms in vomiting's toolkit. I got to say, I hate the whole package. there was that. And then the third thing, and this is the last thing, I think, where it then took hold of my life, mm-hmm. was I was about 22, 23, and I had the worst case of food poisoning I'd ever had. And the worst thing about it was that I didn't have it as I went to bed. I had it when I woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning. And I remember my eyes blinked open. It did a quick analysis of my body. It thought, my heart started racing. It thought, what is going on? I leapt out of that bed like something out of a Halloween movie and dropped onto all fours and started to retch and retch. And I didn't know what was going on. And my boyfriend at the time, he was saying, "What's going on? Should I call an ambulance?" And I was trying to
call him. Yeah. It's not easy to see somebody, you know, having a reaction and not knowing how to what to do.
So. Yeah, I mean, sure, I'd never felt it. I didn't know it was vomiting. I hadn't actually vomited properly up until that point. And I crawled all the way to the bathroom. I thought, I can't be sick. I just can't. I can't let that happen. That noise was coming out, that whoop noise thing. But I was not letting it out. No matter how near I got, nothing was coming out. So I decided this crazy thing I was going to do. I needed to be cold. I couldn't be hot. I always think vomiting reminds me of heat.
Okay, that's an interesting thought. So yeah, we'll talk about it a little bit, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because my body gets hot when I'm sick, heat reminds me of it. So I can't be in a hot country and sick.
Oh, I was going to ask you that. I was going to ask you, what is it like to go to Spain or to a very hot country?
It does trigger because I think this would be the worst place ever to feel sick. But what I did was I ran a freezing cold bath of water and submerged myself in there. And for the next 3-4 days, I managed to not vomit, despite the fact that my partner at the time was vomiting like something out of The Exorcist.
Oh, no,
had it as well. He realized
so 2 hours later. Hearing somebody else wouldn't have been it.
He had it for 1 day. I had it for like 3-4 days all over my body because I wouldn't be sick. I was submerging myself in the freezing water till my skin was blue. So I'd just spend the day going from the spare room next to the bathroom into a freezing cold bath. My routine now is every time I feel sick, my hair goes up in a bubble, like on the top of my head, because it's in time. It's like I'm going to war. So I put my hair in a bubble so it doesn't get in my way. I take off my makeup. I brush my teeth ready.
That's interesting. I just wonder, you're planning it. Like, you know, I wonder why in the makeup. I wonder why.
That's where it started, all of those things. And from there, it's just kind of got more and more complex as it's added more layers to it and more rules, because I've got like a vomiting rule book and my head goes through those rules all the time. And so it's become very, very complex. My friends don't know about like certain situations that might trigger me, or they'll ask, "Is this okay?" I go, and then I have to have a time to think if it kind of computes with my rule book on the subject.
So I have had clients who fear of vomiting and fear of being sick, or fear of seeing their children being sick, there was a good side of it, and it was some of them, it was a bit, took a little bit longer to clear the fear, because the good side of it was that they wouldn't touch any alcohol.
Yes,
so,
exactly.
And they wouldn't go party like that. So so there was, the fact that it was a good side of it, part of their subconscious mind wanted to actually keep this fear. So this is why this is one of the fear that is a bit tricky when you go into it to clear it, because you have to look at the two parts of what is that fear giving me on the positive side, even though you don't want it and you don't wish it on anyone, but there is a positive side of it, which means it's stopping you drinking or partying. I mean, not all of my clients like this, but I've noticed there's quite a few people that I've seen for fear of vomiting commented like this. It's like, since I have that, at least I don't get drunk, or I don't, I'm in control. So it's interesting, because this fear is taking your control, but in other ways, it's controlling something else. How do you manage on a day-to-day? Is the thought or the fear in your mind on a day-to-day, or is just like coming when a situation comes up?
Well, I'm at the stage now where I don't know how much of my feelings of nausea are real or fantasy. And so
did you notice this again? So yeah. So right. Very much stuck in your, so you know, subconsciously our body reacts to our thought, and I don't know if our listeners heard it too, but as you talk about it, something was in your throat again. So
I can feel. I mean, I'm used to managing the feelings that happen in my body.
So if it gets too much, Natalie, just let me know, and then I will send you this color again or a different color. But I just want you to be comfortable talking to our listeners. So obviously, if it gets a little bit too much in your body, just be aware of it and just let me know, and then obviously I can help you with that. So I want to tell the listeners, to anyone who has a fear, there's always a way to get rid of it. It's just, and if people say, oh, I've tried this, and it didn't work, there's nothing to be done, it's just because you haven't either seen the right person, or you haven't been taught how to get rid of it, or use the technique that is good for you, that will actually react and clear it in that sense. So, when you wake up in the morning, is that thought or in your mind, or you're able to completely forget about it, or?
Yeah, usually I'm okay until something triggers me. It kind of builds up. The nighttime is for sure the worst time. It's like I'm taking on all of these stimuli as I go, and I kind of like holding on to it. And so by the time the night comes in, you know, usually I'm very anxious by that stage.
So I'm just going to stop you there. But when you told us the story at the beginning, did that happen at nighttime?
Yes.
Just want to try to explain to our listeners and to you. I don't know if you know that, because the subconscious mind is like a computer software, and it records everything. So the minute that you go back into similar situation, which is the night, because this is when it happened, then your software goes back into, say, okay, night equal, this is what happened, this is how I felt, therefore I need to protect myself, and therefore your subconscious mind is going to send you some feelings and then put you more on edge.
Yes.
So it's interesting, that's what I just thought. But so sorry if I cut you, but I just wanted to explain that to our listeners and to you, in case you weren't aware of that, so that the timing is really important.
Usually, it used to be that if I went out and I'd eaten at a buffet, or if one of my friends happened to mention, oh, I feel a bit off today.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, no one can say that around me. They don't
know. What's the feeling? Like, so if you go out, are you okay to eat at a restaurant? Are you okay to?
Yes, but I have to choose wisely. I don't eat rice when I'm out. Yes. I don't eat pre-prepared salads, like chopped salads, even though that's healthy. It actually stops me from eating some certain healthy foods in preference to some packaged foods like pasties or bread. I feel more comfortable with, which obviously is not good for me, but I feel like anything in a tin is going to be okay, because they're kind of like beans or something like that, so I'm not eating well because
everything sort of, so this fear has taken over your way of freedom. It's taking your freedom of way. Like if you were going and walking to a restaurant, sitting down, and if you wanted to order something, you would just order according to the fear, not according to what you would like to try. How do you deal with the children? I mean, how old are they?
They're both 7 at the minute, but there's 10 months between them, and they're both 7 at the minute.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That is traumatic, really, because I mean, you've got this huge thing for the maternal instinct of needing to do everything you possibly can to make your children safe, and it's competing with that selfish part going, well, I don't want to get sick, I'm not going near them, my gosh.
Natalie, how did you manage to go to, you know, pregnancy? So some of my clients that I've seen, that was a problem, and this is why subconsciously they couldn't even get pregnant, because of the worries of nausea and being sick or feeling sick. And
it was a big problem. I didn't think about it before I got pregnant, but then with my first child, I was very sick. With my second, I was lucky I wasn't at all.
Have you tried anything to clear it?
Well, I did used to go to counselling, and I had a life coach for a long time. We used to just talk about this quite a lot, and I talked to my friends about it and get it off my chest. But I've always been notoriously bad with things to do with mind control. I'm very lazy when it comes to that, because I suppose part of me doesn't believe that I'm going to be able to get rid of it because it's so in depth and so ingrained.
So just so you know, it doesn't matter how long you've had a fear. It's how you clear it that is important. I use energy, and that's how I clear people's fear. Talking is good, it helps, but it helps at the time that you talk, and it helps you maybe 10 minutes or half an hour when you leave, and it helps you a little bit, but it doesn't actually take the memory out of the mind, the wrong belief that's been created, and it doesn't clear the symptoms like we did at the beginning, this, you know, feeling tense in your hands, in your chest, and it doesn't clear that. It's like you talk about it, you release it a little bit, but when you go back into the actual trigger, all the symptoms comes back, because we haven't actually deleted that software saying this is dangerous, this is what happened once and at a specific time, and I've learned that this was so dangerous and so frightening that I need to protect myself. And the subconscious mind doesn't have any logic. So if anybody comes along and tell you, oh, Natalie, it's okay, nothing's going to happen, it'll be fine, this is just like, it doesn't make any difference, because the subconscious mind has decided this is what's going to happen. I know this is how I felt last time. I know I felt like in a big danger, and I have to do anything to protect myself. Talking is good, and it helped you to get up to where you are now. But as you're talking to our listeners, we can still feel that this is very much in you. And yet, as much as you don't want it, it has done something, because it's part of you now. But it's the thinking, that if you start changing your thinking, you know what? I can redefine myself, and it doesn't have to be part of me if I don't want to. I can be in control of my thought. I can actually decide that this fear is so much taking over that I can actually try something or see someone. We can see me if you want, but, you know, and just literally just clearing it. And what do you think the day-to-day life would be if you didn't have it? Oh, I can't even imagine it.
I'm so used to living with the nausea that I guess I couldn't even imagine what the freedom would feel like to wake up and have my body feeling good and healthy, and, you know, not to feel my heart beating in my chest all the time, you know. Yeah, I mean...
This is the first part of the work to get rid of a fear that has been there so long, is to start thinking, what would it be like if I didn't have it? How different would I wake up in the morning? Or how different would it be me walking into a restaurant and ordering what I want to order? You know, starting putting those little thoughts in your mind to start saying, okay, well, and then, because we attract what we're thinking, so, you know, starting recreating how you would want your day to be. So I was going to ask you also, now with the, you know, with COVID, with the pandemic around the world, how is that affecting your fear? Has that made it even different, or is it okay? Or
no, because right away when I first heard about COVID-19, I quickly looked for the symptoms of it to see if nausea was one of them. And when it wasn't, I almost said, oh, thank the Lord for that. It's not one of those things. Because, I mean, like, just to put it in perspective, to show you how my perspective is completely askew about this, when I worry about, if I was to worry about things like cancer, for instance, I am not really, I mean, of course I'm worried about, everyone's worried, they don't want to know that they have a cancer. But for me, the worst thing would be the recovery from it, the treatment, the nausea that comes with trying to defeat it. So I worry if I did get something at some point like cancer, what would my choice be? Would I try to save my life by being ill? Or would I just accept that that was the end for me? I don't know.
Mm.
And it's those things where I think, oh my gosh, one day I'm going to have to make a decision about this, and I don't feel comfortable making it because I really don't know what I would decide. Of course, when I get there, we know that it would probably change. But at this moment, when it's not happening,
I think it's something that is on your mind, and it's something that that again, you know, the fear has no logic, and it's just, but it's so deep that it would make you maybe refuse a treatment because of the symptoms. So, yeah. So that's so, and it's interesting that you started looking into the symptoms of the virus, I mean, the pandemic, and looking straight away like, okay, is that, you know, in the, so, so knowing the symptoms of you know, the virus and the pandemic that's going on, would you go out to a restaurant, or would you be happy to? I mean, I don't know where you are, if the restaurants are open now, or
they've just opened, but my husband has a terrible fear of COVID. He's 20 years older than me. He has a lung condition, so he's very, very fixated on COVID at the moment. So for his benefit, we're all kind of staying away because we know what his fear is like of, you know. So he's got two. So you can imagine what my household is like. It's you've got me with my rule book and my eating and my deep breathing and panic attacks. And you've got my husband who's got a terrible fear of wasps and COVID-19.
Oh, so, I've done worse. But I actually did. I helped a lady who wanted to get married in a garden, and she wouldn't even open a window because she was scared of wasps. So yes. Got rid of the fear of bees and wasps, and then she ended up getting married in a garden. So that was good.
Oh wow! Okay, yeah. Oh, that's cool.
That was really nice. It was really nice, and nobody could believe it. And she did it as, you know, she really wanted it, and people were so worried. How's she going to do this? How's she going to? And we did it, and it was really good.
Wow.
So, yeah. So you got your husband who's got a fear. To be fair, I mean, you know, he's right to look after himself and to isolate himself more and to be a bit more cautious, because that we know that there are statistics that showing that if you're a man and if you're a bit older, then there's you're more at high risk. So he's doing the right thing, you know, and being aware. It's always better to protect yourself in that sense. But so you haven't gone out to eat out, I presume. So
no, we have just recently started having takeaways.
Okay.
With him. So you've got me with the no meat in there. Can't have meat, can't have the rice. Right. And then you've got him washing every single layer of the boxes as they come out, disinfecting them.
Okay.
Reheating them. But then in my mind I'm thinking, no, don't reheat, don't reheat.
So what do you eat? What did you order?
So like I gone, oh my God, this is a nightmare. So I have to have I can't have any meats in there. So I have to have a really hot curry, because in my mind, and as you say, this has got no logic, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is the most ridiculous one. I have to have the hottest curry ever because I don't think germs can live in the spices.
I wonder how hot that's going to be.
I know that it's ridiculous, but honestly, it's something I do mentally factor in when I'm working out what I'm going to eat.
So, and how the kids in this? How do they react?
I've kept this strangeness away from them. So you know, I'm pretty much living a lie with them. Like, oh, look at all these lovely foods. Oh, you've got like so much. I'm kind of like feeding them. Like vicariously, I'm eating those lovely things that I could never eat because they're getting to enjoy the prawns and the seafoods and, you know, and the tuna, the fresh tuna and all that sort of thing. And I'm, in the meantime, eating my tinned beans, my toast, you know.
So it's really affecting you to so many different things and day-to-day life where people wouldn't even think twice. They would just look and pick up a menu, a takeaway menu, and they would just order according to what they feel like eating. And this is what people don't realize, is how it affects every way of thinking. It's not just fear, it's really into your habits, deciding what you're going to do. And even you said the holidays, because you're not keen on going to the hot weather. I mean, I love the hot weather. This is how I would want to go, you know.
So. I love it. I'm just worried about, you know, because I love adventure. So I'd love to go to really remote places and, you know, really natural places, unspoiled destinations, but I worry, like, I'm thinking, have they got aircon? Because if I get, like, really sick, I need to sit on that aircon. I'm going to, you know, I need to be freezing. Or have they got cold water that I can submerge myself in?
Mm-hmm.
Like some sort of real weirdo just submerged in my bath, you know, for an hour, freezing out, chilling out. And I know that I'm putting this fear in them because my daughter, she is terrified of vomiting. So she gets really upset when she's about to vomit. And then I feel
So energy-wise, we can pass on things even before birth. So, you know, or the way we're born, we can create some fear in itself. So if you were born with the cord around the neck, you may become claustrophobic. So if maybe mum was sick a lot the whole pregnancy, then maybe baby later on will be a bit worried about that. So we, you know, energy-wise, we can pass things on. But they having images of you because they see your behavior. That's what we call copy behavior. They're not actually creating the fear because they've experienced something, but just because they're seeing someone behaving like this. So they're more aware of it and they're going to change their thinking. So so the first thing I would say would be to start imagine life without it, what it would be like. So that would be, that's what I would do if I was working with you. I would just start looking into it. Imagine what it would be like to not have it. What's the advantage of not having it? What would the day-to-day life be? So that your mind will start thinking about that, because that's, like you said, it's the first part. It's even hard to even imagine without it. So yeah. I couldn't go along and say, okay, I'll take your fear away. But if you find it even hard to even imagine your life without it, I can't go around and just take it away. It's like having a beautiful car and I come in and I take the car away. Your mind is going to say, no, I want to keep it. And that's what would happen. So it's very much a process and having to be very careful and understanding the state of the mind of the person and say, okay, well, let's learn first that there is a different way of thinking and there is a different way of living without it, that I can maybe live without it. And the first thing would be also to say, this is not my fear. This is a fear. It doesn't belong to me. It's not part of me. So start to your thinking like that. And then we would go into the memory, clear the memory, clear the symptoms in lots of different ways. And that's something that, you know, that would be quite good for you to be aware that you don't have to stay in that state the rest of your life. Okay. So that's something that's important. And it's important to our listeners to know that there are so many ways out there that can be used, and I use it with my clients to get rid of fear. I had somebody not long ago who needed to fly to Italy, and within three sessions, I cleared her fear of flying, so she didn't have to drink alcohol and take Valium, and she could just go off and fly. So you can, Jen, and she had it for, you know, at least 20 years, that fear, and she also came up to me and said, well, I've tried everything, and no one ever managed to take my fear away. So I said, well, you didn't try to come to see me. So let give me that chance and let me do it. And she was very skeptical. And we did it. And she actually wrote a very beautiful testimonial telling me, like, you know, I flew with no alcohol, no Valium, and free of fear. And it was so good. And she probably, you know, and the worst part of it was is flying with COVID. So that was like, you know, that was really like a big thing, and she did it. So we can, you know, it's good for our listeners to understand that you don't have to keep the fear forever. And it doesn't matter if you've had it for a few months, a few years, many years, that, you know, it is possible to get rid of it. It is possible to reprogram your mind to clear it. So we talked about fear, but I'm intrigued about the work that you do and the books that you know, how did you get to do this?
Well, I guess a lot of it is to do with being honest with yourself and your family. That sort of the storytelling aspect of it, of discovering who you are by storytelling as a device, really. So from being a writer, I realized that a lot of the characters I wrote about, even if they were the villain or the mentor or whoever it was, ended up being me, really, all parts of me. It hit me. It was like a revelation. I thought, oh my gosh, I would never have owned up to those things, but I've subconsciously written them into my characters.
That's quite interesting. as
that might be a device for getting those things that are so
So subconsciously you got into the idea of you didn't even realize. It's interesting because I just written my first book, and my first book is about my personal story about how my oldest daughter passed away, and the story in itself was a way of helping to put all the details down and to notice it's in writing and telling the story and sharing the story. The second part is how you can move on and how you can help yourself and what techniques. But it's interesting how subconsciously, I'm not even sure how I got the idea of writing the book in the first place. I think I just wanted to put everything down.
Yes.
And then I, you know, gradually the project came in and it was quite a long project because it was so personal, and I sometimes just didn't want to reread the story and checking and making sure that what I wrote is, you know, is right and the layout and everything. So it's interesting how our subconscious mind wants to help us and sort of guide us. But you've written quite a few books, you said, no? What was the first story?
I thought about how important it is for children and for parents to see both sides of a story, because it came with my daughter. She's a diva. She's way older for her age, but one day we were debating something quite heatedly, and she said to me, "Well, there's only ever one side to the story." She's seven, by the way, and it's your side. And I thought, you know, I really wanted to come back, but I thought, wow, that's profound. Mm-hmm. Actually, yeah, there is one side to story, and it is my side. But then I thought, well, maybe it shouldn't be. Maybe I should look at what she thinks. So I actually took the time. I thought, okay, well, what do you think about this situation? And what she came back with was actually amazing. I'd never thought of that aspect. And I can't remember exactly what it was, but her way of thinking about it, well, how she'd framed it in her mind was completely different than mine. And so I came up with the idea of Split Perspectives books, which ties back into my social enterprise, which is called Split Perspectives. And basically it's about looking at a story and telling it twice, but one time through the child's eyes, the very same scenarios that happen in everyday life. But then we see from mum. So at the beginning, we have the child saying, "Mummy is a monster." And everyday activities that they think why their mum's a monster, like brushing the hair, that sort of thing, everyday dramas, going to the supermarket, walking too far, that sort of thing. And then we look at the other side of the story, which is mummy saying, "My children are monsters," and you actually flip the book upside down. So it literally and figuratively flips the book on its head.
Okay.
And so this just the illustration shows the monster changing from mummy to the child. And a lot of families have said, well, this is a great jumping off point for discussing and debating about how perspective can alter the situation. And if there's a space that feels like an honest, open platform for families to talk about why they feel the way they do. And I'm all for that, because I'm in this situation from repression. I think there is a culture of feeling repressed and putting a happy face on and going on.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
I know one word, when we say something, we think that we assume that the person actually understand what we're saying, but they may see it completely differently. So one word could have a different definition, a different meaning for you than for somebody else. In fact, if you think about it, if you say the word vomiting or sick, for you, that has a total, completely different definition than somebody else who wouldn't have a fear.
Yes.
And it's the same with the parents and children. When we say something, they may not understand what we're saying in that way. They have their own definition and their own thinking that way. And it's true. And the storytelling in itself, in a fear, there is one technique that is called the movie technique, where we go back into the story and we keep telling the story, but we use pressure points at the same time and the colors, and we desensitize the story so that afterwards it becomes just a movie. It's the story doesn't belong to you anymore.
Wow.
And then, so you detach to it. And when you detach to the story, you're no longer in the story, and therefore you no longer have a fear. So that's just one technique that I use with my client. So it's very much, you are right in telling the story is a part of healing, and it's a part of putting it down. So that's very good that you went into this. So you wrote a few books, no? You
Yeah, I wrote, so I'm on a collection of books. I am now mm-hmm. My Daddy is a Monster. So you can imagine I've got to go through all the teachers and his grandparents, everyone, whatever. So I'm going to run the wheels off that one with my Monstrous Me collection. And in between that, I wrote Ben and the Bug, which is another looking at COVID-19 through the eyes of an awkward-looking bug who meets a little boy at the playground. And what I wanted to do there was I realized by talking to mums in the schoolyard, and then afterwards when schools closed down on the WhatsApp threads and stuff, they were very anxious about sending their kids back to school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what I wanted to do was I thought, you know, obviously we have to get back to that stage, and there comes a point where we have to manage risk, I guess. But as long as we're doing all that we can, we need to start changing the face of what people think is this unknown thing out there, and children are hearing these trigger words. They don't really know what to do with that. Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to change the face of what the bug looks like to them, so that, yeah, they are doing the things that they need to do, but they're not expecting some sort of monster to be out there waiting for them. It's not got an intention to harm, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, because if you live in fear, as you know, it would have a big impact, and it's not going to be in a healthy, in a sense. It puts you on a high level of stress, and this is not what we want. When the body is under stress, mm-hmm. it would create, you know, more things. So we don't want to do that. So it's great that you had that idea to do. What would be the message out there to our listeners? You know, what would you say? What would be like a quote that you use, or what would you share with them?
I would say the worst thing is by pretending that everything's okay. Mm-hmm. For me, when I feel like to be authentically yourself, it's okay to have these quirks, you know, to have these things that you're dealing with.
You know, one of my children has a T-shirt saying, "It's fine, it's fine, it's fine," and then the teacher says, "It's not." You know, and it says it all, because you don't always have to be pretending that you're okay. And things happen. It's perfectly okay to not be fine. Mm-hmm. And you know, we want the emotions to come out of your body, not to stay and not to be trapped in the body. Because when they're trapped in the body, they create fear.
Yes.
So that's exactly what's, you know, so the more we talk about it through storytelling, through different techniques, that is the way to move and to deal with those emotions. And I'm very impressed that you managed to get this book out there, you know, during COVID.
You too.
So that's very good. Yeah. I'm actually thinking of, you know, writing a book about, for children, how to release emotions. Because during COVID, I actually opened an emotional well-being online class for children. Wow. So that they have support, and every Monday I just, you know, I see them and we do a session and we clear whatever worry they have. So this was my way of contributing, and I wanted to do something. But it is good, and it's important that people do know that there are ways out there in a very simple way, even just holding a book and reading a book. And I know when my daughter, my oldest daughter, passed away, I actually also got a book, The Invisible String, and I used the book to talk to my younger daughter about, you know, that her sister is still here, and in just there's invisible strings, and we talked about. So books are amazing because it's a start, and you can use that story, and you can and kids relate to characters, mm-hmm. and so I'm really pleased that you can share with our listeners what you've been doing and with your work. So where can we find those books, and where can we find out more about you?
Okay, so anybody who wants to learn more about this very strange person here.
You're not, you're just a human being full of emotion. And, you know, this is what it's all about. This is what's interesting about us, is that we're not a car, we're not a mechanic. We have emotions, so we have a brain, and we are very clever. Our body is extremely clever, and our body really knows how to express itself. And, you know, even when you fall, the healing happened all by itself. You don't tell the body what it needs to do and how you can, you know, just even a tiny little cut. So we are really, you know, a miracle in that sense. So we are very special. We have emotions create our own personality and ourselves. So you are very special, you know. You're an entrepreneur and a writer and author. So where can we find you?
Okay, so my website is www.lollipoplodge.net.
Good. And the books are on Amazon, you mentioned?
Yeah, some of them are, but if you want the hardback version, which flips, which is kind of cool, you'll get that from the store in my website. So that's
okay. So which store has the book? Which store?
LollipopLodge.net/store, and there you can get links to the Amazon versions and also buy from my shop. They're all in the same place.
Excellent. Yeah. And just remind us the title of the books that you've written.
Okay, so there is My Mommy is a Monster. And that's a split perspective books, which I talked about before, and also Ben and the Bug, which handles COVID-19 for little ones.
Okay, excellent. So Natalie, I really want to say thank you to you. Thank you for you to share your story, because it's not easy to talk about, you know, on air about your fear and to express yourself and to really share the symptoms and how the day-to-day life is. So I really want to say thank you to you for sharing this with our listeners. And I, you know, if you ever want to get rid of the fear, you can come to me if you want to, and we can discuss this another time. I'm sure I have to get in touch with you, because I want to write another book for children. So I would need your expertise in that. It takes a lot of courage to come on air and to talk about your fear. And actually, I should say to talk about the fear, because I don't really want you to think that it's yours, because when something belongs to you, it's hard to get rid of. So we're just going to be talking about the fear. And so I really appreciate, and I'm very grateful that you sharing this time with our listeners. And I just want to say thank you so much for talking about this fear, and thank you for your time. So
and thank you for having me on. This has been so useful and the best hour I've spent in a long time, so thank you.
Wow, thank you. So just actually, how are you feeling compared to when we started?
I feel it's kind of motivated and like loose.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yes,
so good. So we did a tiny bit of work on air, which is not bad, so it's good. So thank you so much again, and if anybody wants to talk to me about their fear, they can email me at lauren@fear-busters.com, or they can visit my website at www.fear-busters.com. and thank you very much to our listeners, and this is Lauren Rosenberg, and looking forward to meeting you again, talking about another fear. Bye. Thank you.